need a handout. Marty in the middle aisle there has some, so you can raise your hand or throw things at him. My name is Steve Nelson. I'm a pastor in El Paso, Texas, and I have a lovely wife, Kathleen, and 8 kids, and they range from 4 to 19. And so part of my heart for discipleship, of course, has been just working with my own kids and really wanting them to grab hold of the faith that I've been given and to walk along that path. But I have a heart for just folks in the church, too, that there would be young men who would just follow God, have a heart to give their lives to Him and to pursue Him wholeheartedly. For me, I started my journey with this group of churches in Ames, Iowa, and I went to school there. And a buddy of mine, his name's Danny Higgins, and he started going to the church there, Ames Fellowship Church at the time. And he had met some of the street preachers. There were some guys that would go out and preach on, I can't remember the name of the street, but kind of the one with the dorm buildings on it and stuff. And he started going to the church, and I'd kind of already distanced myself a little bit from church, I guess. I'd grown up in a Christian family, a Baptist church, and so I was going to the little Baptist church there on campus and had already really committed myself to not get involved. And so I'd been invited to their student meetings and small group meetings and whatever they had, and just, no thanks. So I was just attending on Sunday morning. So my friend Danny was going to church and was telling me about some of the stuff he was seeing with the people passing out tracts and preaching and just generally being crazy. And I had never seen that before. I had heard a lot of doctrine, a lot of really good doctrine, and I had a wonderful upbringing. But I hadn't seen a church of people trying to follow God like that. And I had seen a few crazy people in my own church, but it just wasn't like something that everybody was trying to do or the majority were trying to do. And so that was something that was really exciting to me. And so I'm going to tell you just a little bit about that journey, so you can understand why I have a heart for discipleship. And I first got involved in the church in 1984. And it was just kind of almost like a magical time for me. I was learning so much, and this church was doing stuff that was so weird. And part of me was really drawn to it, and part of me was like, man, you guys are just crazy. And I think one of the things that drew me to it was just that they had a heart to reach the world, and they had a heart to see every Christian raised up to really have a significant impact, and they were all part of a mission. And I know some people say they're not really drawn to that, but I think we all are to a degree. If you think of when you were a little kid, what did you want to be when you grew up? Most kids probably want to be what their parents are, or they want to be something kind of significant. Not that their parents aren't significant, but, you know, they want to be a policeman, or they want to be an astronaut, or the president, or, you know, they want to do something that makes their life count, but also that matters to the world. And so whatever they view as mattering to the world is something that's kind of attractive. I remember for a while I wanted to be a conservationist. Now as an adult, that doesn't seem real exciting, but as a kid, you know, it's like, hey, I can help save the world, and I could be a forest ranger, you know, and that was a big deal. I wanted to be an astronaut, and I think there's a part of us that just wants to give our lives to something, so that really drew me to the church. I didn't necessarily want to be crazy like all these other people, but I just thought, you know, I want to be a support. I want to be here. I want to be around these people that are so godly, and so that was my heart. I really wanted my life to count for something, and I saw that what these guys were doing was counting for something, and so I wanted to be a part of that. I remember my discipler, his name was Kirby Cooper, and I love Kirby. He's just a good guy, kind of man's man, big, muscular. He's a male model at times, and his arms, I'm just a runner, so I have pretty decent sized thighs. His arms were as big as my thighs, and it's just like, wow, you're so cool. And I didn't really know him very well, or very long, maybe about 9 months or so. But I remember one time we were dropping off a guy at, I don't remember if it was a fraternity or what, but it was on Fraternity Row. And we were dropping him off at his place, and he got out of the car, and he's walking inside. I can picture it, you know, just like it happened yesterday. And Kirby just kind of gazes out the window, kind of longingly, and he said this. He said, if he doesn't stay in the Word, he will die. And and I was like, man, these people are weird. I have no idea what he's talking about. And I don't remember if I asked him or if he just offered and explained it to me, but he's like, man, you know, if this guy, if he doesn't stay in the Word, if he doesn't keep seeking God and pursuing Him, then he's going to die spiritually. And he's going to fall away from the Lord. And I didn't understand that, because it's like, well, I mean, he's not super involved in stuff, but, you know, he seemed like a pretty good guy. And I don't know why you would say that about him. And I don't know that I saw that guy very many more times. In the 20 years since then, I understand what Kirby was saying. A lot of us will fall away. And it's not just you guys that, you know, maybe this is your first conference, you just got involved in this church in the last 6 months or something. Yeah, you might fall away. Your small group leader might fall away. Your pastor might fall away. And that's what I've watched for the last 28 years. And so it's really pretty discouraging. As a dad, it's discouraging too. I'm going to talk about both dads and disciples because to me it's very much the same. But as a dad, it scares me when I see teenagers after teenager, you know, just continually falling away. And now with Facebook, it's even worse, because I'm kind of a snoop, you know, so some teenager will come up, I'm like, oh, I wonder how they're doing. I go and I look around their page a little bit, and I want to cry. It's like, what a mess. Is this what we're raising? I'm going to put 18 hard years of work into a child, and then they're going to be dropping F-bombs all over the place, and they're going to be all concerned about drinking and looking cool and doing all this stuff. Is that what it's all about? And I have the heart to make a difference in the world, and as I keep seeing people fall away and kids in our own homes fall away, it's like, we got to do something. We have to live differently than the people around us have been living, even than other Christians, even than other good Christians. Something has got to change. And so just a few quick thoughts that I had from these observations were, first of all, my best disciples are my kids. I know a lot of you don't have kids, you're college students. That's great, but you keep this in mind. You know, I've sat with guys every week, had breakfast, had deep spiritual conversations, be very like-minded, have a common dream, and I think, man, together we could reach the world. And then one day they're like, oh, you know, I really don't like this about the church, and not like this, and blah, 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 blah. And off they go. My kids, I can build into 18 years. I can help make sure that they have very limited baggage that they're bringing into adulthood. I can present an image of a man of God to those kids. You know, I know in college ministry, it's really exciting to work with college students because they're young and they're excited and they'll make some tough choices and stuff, and that's great, but man, I feel like with my kids, it's by the time they're 19, 20, you know, they can know tons of scripture, they can have a background, they can have gone out sharing their faith, they've developed products to help other people, you know, they're already in the army, and they're ready to be used more. Now, that's not my only heart. I understand that if our family is just about raising itself, that's kind of a dead end at some point, right? Because then my whole life is spent building into my kids, and my kids' whole life is spent building into their kids, and their kids' whole lives are spent building into their kids, and we still haven't reached the world. So that doesn't really work. So I'm not saying the other disciples aren't important, but you've got to win with your own first. If you can't win with your own, how in the world are you going to reach anyone else? And I'm speaking generally. I know that there are pastors that have had a very hard time with some of their kids, and I don't know all those circumstances. I don't understand all that. But I just know with my kids, it's like, I want to throw it all at my kids. And then if there's anything left over, if I could grab a couple other guys in the church and help them along on their journey, that's great. But man, if I could just save my own kids. Not just save them from hell, but save them into what caught my heart. That they would look around and think, man, this is what I want to give my life to. This Faith Walkers. I want to give my life to this kind of thing. I want to give my life to going out and sharing the gospel. That's what I'm trying to pass on to them. I've also had the thought that our vision to reach the world is, an unreachable dream if we cannot produce disciples, produce and reproduce. And so in the early days, it was so exciting. And I remember hearing things, I don't know if these are true, but like that we were the fastest growing denomination in the United States at one point. I don't know if that's true, but I heard stuff like that. It's like, wow, that's exciting. And you think of, we're going to cover the world. And they have this little multiplication chart. You know, you start with one person, and then each of them shares with one. Or I guess with one, you just have two you can share with. But anyway, start with one. And he gets somebody saved, now you have two. And they each share with somebody, now you have 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. And anybody know how many generations it takes to reach the world? Right. Some kind of math geek out there. Yeah, it's, I can't remember, 20 or, yeah, something like that. And they have this chart up in the back of the church. It's like that. So it's exciting because you think, this is doable. And then I hear these messages about, you know, well, you don't think you can reach the world. Well, have you ever been to Latin America? Have you ever seen a Coke machine or a Pepsi machine there? You know, this is doable. Other people do it for money. And they're like, yeah, this is exciting. I want to throw my life at this. But after 28 years, you kind of look around. It's like, okay, well, you know, maybe we've quadrupled or something in 28 years, but I don't know that I quite have the same passion that I did back then because people fall away, people drift off, people don't just go to another church, but they just quit going to church, and they just follow a totally different pattern of life. And after those years, other people get discouraged as well, and you just don't throw your life at it anymore. And that bugs me, because I'm still naive, I guess. I still think there's got to be a way to reach the world. I want to be a part of this. And clearly, the way to reach the world is through disciples. You can't do it yourself. And I'm all for seeing as many people saved as I can, but I understand that long term, we need to have disciples, people who are also sharing that. And one of the things I see is that we can't really produce well-rounded disciples if we don't really know what a disciple looks like. If we don't have a target. I think in parenting, this is a huge problem. People just become parents. You know, they don't read about it and think about it and try to figure out what they're going to accomplish. They just, all of a sudden, they have a baby, and they're like, okay, well, I guess we'll feed and change the thing, and I think it'd be nice if you played soccer someday, and, you know, you just do some odds and ends like that. So I have a few questions that I'd like to ask you guys that would just help us envision what's in our heads. Help us see the way we think. And so on these questions, I'm just going to throw it out, and you guys can throw out answers. But I'm not looking for the super pastoral churchy answer, but what do you really feel? What do you really think? Suppose you had a friend who is a brand new Christian, and this friend asks, what do Christians do? What would you say? This brand new Christian comes up to you in his basic experience prayer. Okay, I became a Christian. Now what? What would you say? Throw it out. Live for Jesus, okay? That's good. What was that?
Start reading the Bible at the book of John.
Start reading the Bible at the book of John, okay? If this was Family Feud, I bet that would be the number one answer. Okay?
Share the gospel, obey.
Share the gospel. Obey. Praise and worship God.
Community.
Serve others. Okay? Fellowship with Christ. Make motorcycles.
Make more disciples.
Making motorcycles is pretty cool too. So we have a feel. I'll move on to the next one before I give my thoughts on that. Suppose a new guy had been coming to your church about 4 weeks, and you looked at him and thought, I think he'll be a great leader. I think he's got a ton of potential. What kind of things must you have seen in his life that you had that thought? Humility? Personality?
Self-control?
Huh?
Passion?
Okay.
Under authority.
Character?
Under authority, character?
Teachable.
Teachable?
Spends consistent time in the Word.
Okay. Okay, he's been coming to church 4 weeks. You guys think you know all that stuff about him?
No.
Okay. What could he do that could make that kind of impression in 4 weeks?
Outgoing.
Outgoing? Okay.
Friendly.
He's friendly.
Carry tables and chairs.
What?
Carry tables and chairs.
Okay. Servant? Similar.
Share the gospel with others.
Share the gospel? Okay. Let me ask one more question. Describe the ideal 18-year-old who has been fully discipled by Christian parents. What would this young man or woman be like? So, for those of you who are parents, you know, what would be the ideal 18-year-old? What are you shooting for? Ministry focus?
Crazy for God? Someone who serves before themselves.
Serves? I just heard blah, 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 blah. Character?
Disciples, friends?
Joyful. Okay.
Open and honest.
That's good.
Understands and reads the word.
Winning the loss. Words and parents. I caught that much. It was from two different
things.
Wants to please his parents. Wants to win the loss.
Somebody's crazy about Jesus.
Crazy about Jesus. Okay, let's stop there.
Language, movies, music.
Okay, language, movies, music. Maybe less of all those things. Okay, so here's my opinion on those. I sent out an email to a bunch of our leaders one time and asked that first question. So someone's a new Christian and they say, what should I do? What would you tell them? What's the first thing? And hands down it is, read the word. Okay, that's interesting. And I had even specifically worded kind of, what would you tell him to do? And so that's how we view the Christian life. This is what Christians do, is we read the word. And I think that's interesting because, I think for a lot of us, you know, if you're reading the word every day, you're like, yeah, I'm doing really well right now. And if you're not reading the word, you kind of feel like, oh, I'm a big loser. I don't know why God likes me. And so I think we really view that as a huge thing. Personally, I think for the 20-year-old or 18-year-old, whatever it was, honestly, I think most parents would be happy if their kid's still in school, hasn't gotten pregnant or gotten anybody pregnant, and still goes to church. I think most parents would be pretty. I know it's not the ideal, but you know, those teen years are tough. And if you got that, it's like, we did a pretty good job. Can't even remember the other one. Guy coming to church. Okay, here's what I would think. Maybe I'm just less spiritual than you guys, but I would look at a guy that serves. You guys mentioned that. He comes to church every week, and he's on time. Comes to church every week, he's on time. And he serves, kind of pays attention during the message. I'd be like, wow, man, that kid has potential. And so even though I know, you know, well, the right answer is, you know, character, all the stuff you guys said, it's like, no, actually, I get pretty excited about someone long before that. You know, they just kind of show any sign of life. I'm like, wow, this guy has a lot of potential. And so I guess I just wonder, and maybe it's just me, but it's like, if this is really the way we think, that, you know, well, we don't do too much damage, we don't get any pregnant, we you know, show up at time, and we read our Bibles. That's the Christian life. And so even though I know doctrinally we know a lot of good answers, I'm not sure we really have those things as the goal of discipleship or the goal of helping someone be a man of God or a woman of God. And I think in parenting, people flounder a lot in that because they don't have a goal thought through. I think in our own lives, we flounder in that because we don't even understand what we're supposed to be doing. We understand I'm supposed to be reading my Bible and I'm not, and I feel guilty. Or prayer. I don't know if that got mentioned very much, but prayer is one of those things too. It's like, well, we know we should do it, but we don't. But we really should if we were good Christians. So I just want to think about What does a disciple of Jesus look like? I want to cover five areas. I think of them as the big five. And these are the five areas you must nail with your kids. Really, the five areas you must nail with yourself. Or if you're helping disciple someone else, these are really key areas as well. So, what does a disciple of Jesus look like? I'm just going to cover these five super quick, and then we're going to go back through them in detail. He loves God supremely. Loves others sacrificially. Views self correctly, or has a good self-worth, self-identity. I'll explain that a little bit more. Has useful skills. That might be kind of weird when you're thinking about discipling someone in college or something, but if you're thinking about raising up your own child, you know, a lot of our efforts as parents is put into education, which is passing on skills, right? Strong character, of course, we would think of that. Think of maturity as being kind of like the qualifications that are given in 1 Timothy 3 or Titus 1, qualifications for a pastor or an elder. And we know that the vast majority of those relate to character. And so I want to go through those five areas and just talk about them a little bit and talk about just some practicals in those areas. So, I guess one thought from last night. Pat Sokol said, you've got to have a plan. So if we're going to disciple someone, we need to understand what we're doing, and then we have to have a plan to do it. So we can identify these five areas, and then we need a plan. And Pat's a guy that I just like to listen to, and I don't take a lot of notes. He's more of a flow of thought kind of guy. And this is like one of the things I wrote down. I looked at it, and I said, oh, that's really good. And it's like, actually, that's not quite as exciting as it seemed when he said it, but it sounded really important when he said it. So you have to think of it with his emphasis, not mine. So let's go through those five things. Disciple loves God supremely. I don't know that anybody's going to argue with me on this one. Mark 12:30, the most important command answer Jesus is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. This should just be seared to our foreheads. I mean, we should just, you know, what's the most important thing in the Christian life? Love God. What's the first thing you should do after becoming a Christian? Love God. And I guess this just kind of concerns me as I come up with all these other things. If I came up with a list of 100 things a person should do after they became a Christian, I don't know that this would be on the list. The most important one. Because I just don't tend to think that way. It's not super practical, right? And so it just kind of gets pushed off to the side. And I worry, I mean, I know doctrinally we all believe that, oh, that's the most important thing, but I worry it just gets pushed off so much that it's really secondary. Isaiah 29:13, the Lord says, these people come near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. Their worship of me is made up only of rules taught by men. Well, it's pretty easy to fall into that, isn't it? Our worship of him can be just made up of rules taught by men. Do we do that? Honestly, I think when we're thinking, man, I'm a good Christian when I'm having quiet times, I'm a bad Christian when I'm not, I think that falls into that. If it's not done in the right heart. We're just checking off a list. Oh, I got my quiet time. It doesn't matter the quality. It doesn't matter if we connect with Jesus. Yep. Did my 20 minutes or whatever it is. I'm good to go. 1 Timothy 4:8. I always forget 7. 7, at least part of it, says, train yourselves to be godly. It's probably more important than the part that I have here. Train yourselves to be godly, for physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. If you can train yourself to be godly, then we should be able to train ourselves to do these five things. If you can train yourselves to be godly, then you should be able to train yourself to love God. You should be able to make a huge difference in that area. Or when he says train yourselves to be godly, it's worthless. It doesn't really matter. If you can't train yourself in the most important area, if you can't grow in that, if you can't make some kind of effort towards that, the verse is kind of meaningless. Okay, so what's that look like? Ideal world. You think of kind of the perfect little family, you know, the old school kind, mom and dad, kids, dad's raising the kids, loves the kids, spends time with the kids, disciplines the kids, instructs them, urges them on to better things, bigger things, helps them grow and mature. Okay, how do they get their concept of God? Well, in the ideal world, it's pretty simple, right? You just look at the kid and you say, hey, buddy, you know, I really love you. I love you so much, it's just hard for you to grasp. Do you know what? God loves you even more than that. And all of a sudden, it's just, boom, I got it. I know what God's like. He's like you, but better. When you love me, he really loves me. You're serious? He's serious. You don't let me get away with anything? He doesn't let me get away with anything. You know, it's just, in essence, when your kids are little, you're God to them. That's how they view you. And then later on, you correct them and say, no, I'm not God. God's God. And he doesn't have all the faults that I do. He doesn't have a short temper. And he's the perfect daddy. And so it should be real natural. Imagine if you had, let's say, a young guy that comes into your church, and he's just one of those guys that's like, oh, I'm never going to get married. I hate women. Marriage is a mess, because he's from a rough family. And you're trying to figure out how to help this guy. And he's like, oh, no, I don't want, bachelor till the rapture and all that stuff. And, well, what could you do to help him? Well, you could give him some books, right? So, well, here's a book on marriage. It really explains this really good. Like, oh, thanks. Well, and here's a book on how to do conflict management, because, married people really need that. And here's one on communication. It's really good stuff for marriage. And that could all be helpful. I mean, okay, yeah, that's good. But what would you really want to do?
Invite him over.
Let him move in with you for a year. That would be awesome. If you had a good marriage. We have some friends that, I don't even know how to describe their marriage, but when we were young marrieds, we'd hang out with them, and we didn't see them a whole lot, but we'd play games with them and stuff, and they'd be like, you did the bad move on me, and punch the other one in the shoulder, and then punch back, and then they'd be like, do you see this mark? See this right here? He pinched me the other day. Well, you see this one right here? She pinched me, and they go back and forth, and thankfully, they're still married and have a pretty good marriage, I think. But you wouldn't necessarily want to send that guy in that home, right? Okay, that's not quite the picture we want to communicate. So you want your disciple to see a good picture of what you're trying to communicate. And it's not real helpful to say, okay, well, memorize these 10 verses on marriage and read this book on marriage, because they just don't get it. Okay, so you want your kid to understand how to love God. You've got to imitate that for them. Sure, you can give them some verses on loving God. I'm sure there's some great books on loving God. You can have a sermon or Bible study on it. You can cover it in a small group. But they're looking to you to see what God is like and how they're going to respond to God, how they're going to have a relationship with God. This is something that freaks people out, and they're like, oh, I don't want to be that to them. I don't want them to be looking up to me to know how to act or to think of me like the way God should be. Why do you think people are so offended when their disciple or their mentor, somebody they look up to, falls away? Because it's like God died to them. They were looking to that person to see a picture of God. And he messed up. And sure, we can say, well, they really shouldn't have been doing that. Okay, well, that's fine, but they're spiritual babies. What do you expect them to do? They're looking to you. Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. We're supposed to be imitators of God. It shouldn't be the most unhealthy thing in the world if our disciples imitate us. That should be a pretty good thing if we're not, punching and pinching and doing all these weird things in our Christian life, We need to focus on ourselves. You really want to help the person you're discipling? You want to help your own child? Pursue God yourself. That's the key. That's how they're going to see it. That's how they're going to catch it. They need to see it in your life first. And that has to be the focal point of what they do. So I'm going to go through some practicals real quick here, but just practically, I think we get it all backwards. You know, it's like, okay, I want to be a good Christian, so I'm going to read my Bible and I'm going to pray and I'm going to memorize verses and I'm going to show up at all these meetings and even prayer meeting. That's the really hard one, and that's going to make me a good Christian. Even though we know that's not right, no, I'm going to really try to love God and walk in relationship with Him and enjoy my relationship with Him. And as a means of doing that, I'm going to learn about Him through His Word. I'm going to try to grow closer to Him, to understand Him better, to learn what's on His heart, to follow Him, to find out what He wants. And that's why I'm going to read the Word, and that's why I'm going to memorize verses. And I'm going to pray to Him because I need to talk to Him like I would my regular dad, my earthly dad. Then that's healthy, and then read the Bible all you want. That's great. But when you're reading the Bible to be godly, that's just, it's messed up a little bit. And we're bypassing the most important thing, which is to love God. So, let me cover a few practicals real quick. I can't remember. Is there on here? Yep. Obviously, loving God, I think a great expression of our love for God is worship. I think specifically music-type worship. I don't really understand why, but there's just an aspect of particularly guitars. It's like, God made those. And there's just something, you just feel close to God during that time. He created us so that we can enjoy that. And sometimes that stuff seems kind of spiritually sissy or something. You know, like, well, I'm experiencing God through music. I'm experiencing God through nature. But we shouldn't do it that way. That's wonderful. That's why God made us that way, so that, you know, our ears can hear, like, I can't remember, it's like a molecule of movement or something like that, or three molecules, some crazy distance that our eardrum has to move and we can hear it. God made us so that we could hear that stuff. God made this world so beautiful, so we look at it and say, wow, God, you're awesome. You are so cool. The way you created this beautiful sky, the stars and the sun and the moon and the mountains and the trees and the weird little creatures and the sea and all kinds of stuff. He wants us to stand in awe. And I think when we worship, it's the time that we recognize that kind of thing and we sing that to Him. Sing is like praying, right? We're praying that to Him. God, you're so awesome. I think that's really healthy to do. And all this stuff, you do it with the people you're discipling. You do it with your children. You do it with the guy at church you're trying to build into. Have quiet times. You need to do it yourself. Do you need to do it with your disciples? Again, it's just a means to getting to know God better. It's not the end. It's the means to the end. So the end is that we would love God. But as we read about Him and find out what He's like and read all the amazing stories in the Old Testament and stuff and doctrine and all that stuff, helps us understand Him and fall more deeply in love with Him. You know, in my early days when I was in college, oftentimes there would be, you know, four or five of us men that would get together at some horribly early time in the morning, which was probably at the time, it was probably 10 a.m. or something, but in college that seemed horribly early. And we would just, you know, sit and have quiet times together, just read our own thing, share a thought at the end, and the only difference between that and doing it on my own is that when I do it with those guys, I'd actually do it. And so I think that's really valuable. You want your disciple to have quiet times, you have them with them. If you want your kids to have quiet times, have your quiet times with them if at all possible. If you're homeschooling, we homeschool. We don't ever have our spiritual stuff as part of the homeschool because I don't want it to be a curriculum. I want it to be the relationship. I want it to be something that we do together. Just my own personal opinion. Pray with people. You know, there's something about praying with people that they really get to see your heart. You know, for me, I'm not a great visionary type person. You know, I'll kind of have a vision, be like, okay, here's what we're doing. And I just I'm a plugger. I just plug away, plug away. Okay, we're working on this vision. And somebody else in the church would be like, what are we doing? Do we even have any idea what we're doing? I'm like, yeah, we're doing the same vision that we started 3 years ago. What are you talking about? And they don't get it because I haven't been communicating it. And so it's not a strength of mine. I try to work on it, and it never seems to get any better. But when I pray with people, they get to see my heart. They get to see my passion. They get to see the stuff that's burdening me, the lost souls in our city, the people who are hurting in our church. And they get to see a part of my heart. I get to see a part of their heart. Remember years ago before we started the Greeley Church, we had a little 40 days of prayer thing where we went up on kind of a mountainside or foothill side in Fort Collins and just sought the Lord together. And it was kind of a commitment thing, so most of the guys were real committed and they were there every day. And I remember kind of guilted some of the guys into it because there was this new guy that was coming to church and he had agreed to be a part of this. And so the older guys could be like, well, are you going to be a part of this? And I'm like, ah, not sure. Well, this guy's coming. And like, oh yeah, I suppose I should go then, be a good example and stuff. And so this guy started joining us, and I got to see his heart, and his desire to learn. And, you know, after a couple weeks, probably I'm like, you know, I think this could be our next pastor. And it turns out it was Mitch Majeski, and now Mitch is like, I have to drop his name just to sound important. You know, and so it's cool though. Just that it's like I could see his heart when we were praying, and you know, I'm sure a lot of other things built into his life to make him who he is today. But part of that seed was nurtured in just praying together with a group of men, seeing their hearts and seeing that passion. And you can kind of overlook some of our weaknesses and quirks and personalities and stuff. And man, we are united together. So pray with your guys. Pray with your kids. Consume the Bible. I know Joe Abdo was one of the guys that discipled me early on and taught me to memorize verses. And for many years I thought, well, I don't have a good memory. And that's true. And so I thought, so I'm kind of excused from this. You know, because I just can't do it. It's too much work. It's not worth the time. And then one day it hit me, it's like, well, because I don't have a good memory, maybe I should try harder at it because I'm the guy that really needs to do that because it doesn't stick with me otherwise. Okay. And so I'd say the time in my life where I grew the most was when I was actively memorizing the most because I was consuming the scripture, just getting packed into my head. And I still couldn't always quote it word for word when I needed something, but it's like, okay, I know this is there, and I know this truth, and I know where to find it, and it just really changed my life because I had God's scripture, and I had it down cold somewhat. So, anyway, so on loving God, I think these are just practicals. Again, the big idea is to focus on loving God and to keep these things in their place. These are just ways to grow in knowing Him and stuff, but these are not the key. The next area is a disciple loves others sacrificially. And I see where this is coming from. So the first most important commandment is to love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. The second is to love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, so the second most important thing on God's heart would be that we love people. Again, if we come up with a list of things that are the most important things to do, it might actually place higher than loving God. But it might be a ways down the list. And we lose sight of how important this is. You know, we can value certain things. Like if you reach out to your neighbor who is your age and might actually come to church, you know, you feel like that was a good thing. That, you know, that was valuable. That really counted for something. But if you reach out to your neighbor who's 80 years old and is never going to come to your church, well, I don't know if that's really good use of time. Even though the second most important thing that we're supposed to do is to love our neighbor. We have lots of neighbors. You know, with our kids, so we disciple them, their neighbors are their siblings. A lot of people think, oh, sibling rivalry, you know, that's just the way it is. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to stop it. That's what you're going to do, because it's the second most important thing. It's that they learn to love. I'm not saying that's perfect in our family. It's certainly not. But we make a lot of effort towards, you must get along. This is the most important thing for you guys. You have to love each other. You have to learn to work together. Matthew 20:28, Jesus said, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus didn't come as a king saying, okay, you guys, you know, bow down to me and you do all this stuff for me. Okay, I'm going to straighten you out. I'm going to tell you what to do and you fall. You know, he came and he's like washing feet and touching leper-ridden people. That doesn't make sense. Leprosy people. What do you call them? Lepers. There you go. Leper people is pretty cool, though. So, you know, he came to serve and ultimately to give his life on the cross. His whole life was a picture of service. And again, sometimes we don't value that in the way that we should, because we don't value loving your neighbor as highly as we should. And for me, that's something that's it's just been encouraging in ministry, to not focus so much on the fruit, on, you know, okay, well, is this going to get somebody to come to church? But some stuff we do that way. We do outreach specifically trying to get people to come. But we also try to do some service where it's like, okay, we're just trying to love people. And we don't think they'll come. We don't expect them to come. If they do, that's great, but they probably won't. But we're going to love them. We're going to serve them in some way. And so that's a great thing with your kids, to teach them to serve. I remember for me as a young college student, I remember the first small group I went to, and we had some kind of cake or something afterwards. I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then one of the guys called me into the kitchen. I'm like, okay, what's up? And he's like, hey, we're washing dishes. Why would you do that? You know, can't the gals get this? I know that sounds terrible, but that's how I grew up. You know, it's like you go for Thanksgiving dinner, and you have this ton of food that all the ladies worked on, and then you eat it all, and then all the men go watch football, and all the women go slave away in the kitchen. And I didn't know any better. I just thought, that's just the way it worked. But they straightened me out and said, no, we're servants. You know, we serve others. Wow, that's wild. Who would have thought? I remember them saying in the small group, hey, we need someone to serve in the nursery this coming month. So? No. I'm a college student. I don't have kids. Why should I serve in the nursery? Not my problem. You know, it was just a foreign concept to me. And now I look back, it's like, man, those guys were masterful. You know, pulling me into small group, and right away, it's like, hey, come wash dishes with us. Hey, sign up for the nursery. And they were training me to serve and to see myself as a part of the church and someone who could serve in the church and not just someone who was taking. Gospel. I'm going to put this under this category. I think the most loving thing we can do is to share the gospel. I mean, if you really believe that people are going to hell, then, boy, it should be nice to tell them they could go to heaven. Nice to tell them that they could be forgiven. Talk to dads. This is something that really bugged me a few years ago because I'm pretty shy. I don't know if it probably doesn't seem that way when I'm up here, but I am. It's hard for me to talk to people that I don't know or that I know, either way. It's hard for me to initiate a conversation, and for whatever reason, it's getting worse as I get older. And I can sense it even at church. Sometimes I'll walk around after church and I'll be able to, you know, okay, well, here's a new guy, and I walk up, and I feel fine. And some days, I'm just terrified. I know it's unreasonable. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know what I'm afraid of. But it's like, okay, I'm going to pretend like I'm doing something else so that nobody sees that I'm not talking to these new people. And it's just messed up. So when it comes to sharing the gospel, it's like, oh, man, that's crazy. And, you know, everybody thinks, well, you know, yeah, cold turkey, that's really scary. And I don't like that either. And then it's like, well, it's not really any easier to share with your friends, is it? So, you know, how do you get around that? So, you know, as a dad, it's like, okay, my kids are getting older. I'm just not going to pass this on to them. I'm just going to say, hey, go learn this from someone else. I'm not very good at this. what are they going to say? Well, I'm not either. It's like, oh, man, I've got to learn how to do this. Remember years ago, Rick Whitney saying that the key to winning with your family was the Great Commission. And I was just like, what are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense at all. It just sounded like he was saying it just to say something churchy. And then as my kids got older, it's like, wow, I really see the wisdom in that because this is what they're giving their life to. They're loving people. They're helping people cross from death to life. And if you don't have that, what are you going to give your life to? Something that doesn't matter. So I really had to fight through this. I shared about this a couple pastors' conference or Faith Walkers ago. I called chicken evangelism. I just tried to force myself to go out for 40 days in a row and share the gospel. And it was the most horrible, painful thing I've ever done, especially those first 5 days or so. But then over time, it's like, I can change the wording a little bit because the way I used to, this is kind of uncomfortable and I felt like I was lying and I could just change this and I can change this and I basically learned to share the gospel in a way that I was way more comfortable with. Well, now I have something to pass on to my kids and I can do it with them. It's still hard. It's still awkward for me, but I'd say in the last 4 years, I've grown more in this area than the last 43 years before that combined. Because I've really just seen this is important. I need to pass it on. I need to learn it myself. I mean, I'm a pastor. I should probably set an example, you know. But all of us, we've got to do that. It's so important. Again, speaking to the older people, I think the young people, you guys just think, oh, yeah, we should just go on campus and share. You guys kind of have a venue to do that. Just to encourage the older folks, we started an outreach at our church, a bar outreach. And basically what you do is you set your alarm for 1 o'clock in the morning on Saturday night, and then your alarm goes off, and you jump out of bed, and you drive down to the church building, and then you pray real quick, and then you set out the barbecue grill and grill up some hot dogs, and then people come out of the bar rush, and they eat hot dogs and drink bottled waters, and they just sit and talk to you about anything. And spiritual things. And it's super easy to get into conversations. And where we're at, it's a lot of military guys, so they're young, and they're looking for people who have answers. So they're not wanting to talk to my 19-year-old son, they're wanting to talk to me, the guy with the gray hair, or the guy who's bald, or my wife, who's the mother figure, you know? And they want answers. And I think what can happen is people get out of that college age group, and they just think, well, that's kind of over. I don't know how you can really share your faith anymore now. My son this morning, I don't know what put a bee in his bonnet, but he said on the way over, he's like, I think somebody ought to stand up there at Faith Walkers and ought to say that those people who have been following the Lord for a long time, they need to quit looking back at their glory years. I don't know where that came from, but it's like, yeah, they do. Let's start some of our own glory years. Bar outreach is so awesome. It's so much fun. And it's for old people. I mean, yeah, I'm sure some of you young guys would be like, that's a cool idea, and you'll try it and try to make it work. And that's great. It might work for you young folks too, but for us, it's awesome for the old people, other than the 1 o'clock in the morning part. But it's so cool. You get in these awesome conversations. And one of our guys, Troy, he kind of leads it up. I only go about once every 6 weeks because I have an excuse. Because I get up early in the morning for my message, and that sounds terrible in this group, but trust me, it's a good excuse. But I love it when I go. But Troy said that one of the guys, one of our customers, came up to him the other day. He's like, man, I got back from my last deployment, and I was a spiritual mess. I'd just given up on God, and I was a complete wreck. Says, do you know what saved me? This right here. These hot dogs. Do you know what these are? And he picks up a hot dog. These are Jesus dogs. Jesus dogs saved my life. Cool. You know, I mean, and it's like, almost every week there's something like that that happens where it's like, we really made a difference to someone's life. And we don't just have to be old and getting gray and looking back to the glory years. We can keep pressing forward so we have something to pass on. You college students, you're trying to build into your peers. And I know some of you are like me. And you're just laying low. And you're like, oh yeah, other people are kind of spearheading this, and I'll just kind of hang low. And I mean, I've taught outreach class before. Many times. And just barely been sharing the gospel at all. Or be teaching outreach class, and okay, now let's go out and do something. But, oh, I'm sick. I've got to come up with an excuse. And I would go out, but so hard. Well, if you want to rock the world, that's the front lines, right? If our mission from God is to reach the world, then that's the front lines. And if we're not winning people and building people and getting disciples, we're not winning the war. And for those of you who are excited about discipleship, excited about reaching the world, excited about making your life count for something, you just, well, I guess we'll have to get excited about something else. Or you can jump in there. Say, I want to be a part of this. I don't like this. It's not natural for me, but I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure out a way that works for me and my personality and my gifts. Okay. Some of the other ones are going to go a little quicker here. Oops. Okay, a disciple views himself or herself correctly. Okay, so this is basically your identity, your self-worth. I think it's easier to look at the bad side of this than the good side. Because when, okay, well, what's that look like? Like, I don't know, just somebody's healthy. What's it look like on the bad side? Person's dark, they're depressed, or they hate themselves, or they're consumed in guilt, or they keep saying things like, oh, I could never be good enough, or I'm so scared of hell, and no matter how many times you tell them you're forgiven, they don't seem to quite get it, and they don't understand that their Heavenly Father is a daddy who loves them, and it destroys them. Same verse. The most important commandment, love God. The second is to love your neighbor as yourself. Okay? Well, there's a little bit of an implication there that you have a correct understanding of yourself. It's not necessarily, well, I'm dirt, I'm scum, and I'm going to treat everybody else better than me, but there's a, you know, I have a right identity. I see that I have value not because I'm a great person. I have value because that value comes from God. This is one of my favorite passages in the Bible. And I know someone shared it. It was really good. For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control, and self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, to brotherly kindness love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. But if anyone does not have them, he's nearsighted and blind and has forgotten that he's been cleansed from his past sins. Well, ineffective and unproductive, that's the opposite of what I want, right? I want to change the world. I want to make a difference. I want my life to count for something. I want to be effective and productive. Okay, so what do I need to do? Well, I need to have all that stuff, and I need to have it in increasing measure. Need to be growing. You know, I don't have to be perfect. I just need to be growing in these things. That's so cool. So cool to think about discipleship. And you might feel like, well, I can't disciple anybody because I don't have my life all straightened out. That's all right. Just disciple somebody who's not quite as straightened out as you are. You know, and then you grow, and they'll watch you grow, and you guys can keep growing together. And that works out fine. Anyway, I wanted to highlight the bottom part of this verse. It says, if anyone does not have these things, basically he's not growing in godliness. He's nearsighted and blind. He's forgotten that he's been cleansed from his past sins. You see that? If they're not growing, it's because they don't understand their forgiveness. Well, what is that? Well, that's their identity. That's their understanding of who they are before God. Ephesians 4:1, as a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you receive. Does your disciple, does your son or daughter, the guy in your small group, do they understand they have a calling, that God has called them to live for him? Acts 27:23, last night an angel of the God, whose I am and whom I serve, stood beside me. My wife and I really like that one because it's the God of whose I am and whom I serve. I'm his and I'm his servant. That's a great identity verse. 1 Peter 2:11, dear friends, I urge you as aliens and strangers in the world to abstain from sinful desires which war against your soul. Man, this is so important, especially upper teen years or so, and I don't know, maybe till 25 or so, to some degree your whole life. But a lot of our life, a lot of those teen years are spent trying to be cool, trying to fit in, trying to be accepted by others. You know, we get offered something, we think, well, I'm going to take it because I don't want to look like a dweeb, right? I want to be cool in the eyes of my friends. So I have to wear certain clothes, wear certain shoes, I have to walk a certain way. Remember back when I was in college, you only wore your backpack on one shoulder. You know, and I would go around, I rode a bike a lot, so I'd wear it on two, but then I'd walk to class with it still on two shoulders. And it was like I was an outcast, you know, and I just sensed it. And I was just being proud. It's like, I'm too cool to bow down to your wishes. You know, I'm going to wear it on two shoulders. You know, and Adam, what it is now, one or two, or probably backpacks aren't cool. I don't know, but it's, you know, you're just, there's just always this pressure to conform. And this verse basically says, why are you trying to conform? You're an alien. You're like a person coming from another country. You're not going to fit in. What are you thinking? You're going to stand out, and you should stand out. This is what you've been called to. Pass that on to your guys. Pass that on to your kids.
Sure. How do you rectify that with Jesus saying to, or Paul was saying to the Jews that became like the Jews, to the Gentile, to the different people groups who became like those people?
Okay. How do you sync that up with kind of the 1 Corinthians 9? Paul saying, you know, to the lost there, the Jews that became like the Jews, the Gentiles like the Gentiles, or whatever. Well, basically, I think that verse is just horrendously overused and horrendously misinterpreted. And I think there is a degree to which it's healthy to. I think some people almost go out of their way to not fit in, and so I don't think that's healthy to be way over the board, weird. And to, I'm trying to think of a good example. I don't want to pick on the Amish all the time, but yeah, you know, kind of like that. It's like, okay, well, maybe that goes a little too far. And that was probably appropriate at some point, but I'm not sure that is the best way to connect with our society right now. But what I see, like if I think of college students, what I see is, well, they want to hang out with their friends. And so what they do is they watch lots of TV, and they play lots of video games, and they watch lots of movies, and maybe a little bit of drinking, a little bit of smoking, and just, you know, trying to fit in, just do what they do, not too much of what they do, and it's like, you missed it. You're supposed to be an alien. And so I do think there's a degree to which you become like others, but it doesn't just have to be in our coolness factor. John Myers, I was talking about this once with John Mayer, and he said something to the effect of being cool is having a large value of what the world values, or large quantity of what the world values. Isn't that true? Isn't that what being cool is? For the most part, some people are cool because they kind of stand out and are weird, right? They're different cool. But for the most part, being cool is being worldly. And so there is a degree to which we should we should meet the lost part way, like bar outreach. I think that's a good example. We're not like, oh, well, we would never be around a bar. Those girls have short skirts on in the middle of the night, and so we don't want anything to do with you guys. We're like befriending them and loving them, and we're going part way, but we're not dressing like them, we're not drinking like them, we're not talking like them, which is really pretty funny to hear them talk. They self-police. So if somebody starts cussing, someone else says, hey, shut the blank up, this is a church. That's a strange place for outreach. Remember there's a guy that was in one of the churches I pastored in, and he kept bringing up issues that were like 20 years old, not with me, but with other people. And he'd bring them up, we'd talk through them, and it's like, you know, you should probably forgive them, you don't even know them anymore, it's a long time ago, I think they were good-hearted, we're talking through it, oh yeah, yeah, okay. And then, you know, 3 months later, bring it up again, and bring it up again and again, and finally I just kind of blew my cork one day after church, and I stopped, and I looked at him, and I'm like, you have got to forgive people or it will destroy you. And I'm not usually that strong with people, but it's like, I'm just so fed up with this. This is killing you, and it's killing me to watch you. And he kept holding on to it. This is one of the most awesome Christians I've ever known. The guy that influenced me deeply. And he couldn't forgive. And I think that's because he didn't have a correct view of himself. He didn't grasp his own forgiveness. So he held on to that garbage. You know, this one's really hard. Your self-image, how do you change that? And I'm like, I don't know, that's tough. You know, we have like a little identity truth pack that you could focus on verses and stuff. It's like, well, that's good. What's really worked for people? And you know what came to mind was Mark Darling. And Mark was my first worship pastor and back in Ames. And he told a story about how he was so messed up and didn't understand God's love and couldn't get it at all. And so he got these tapes and he listened to them all summer long. Oh, wow, that's really cool. That changed his life. And then I heard him speak at a pastor's conference. And he told me this story about how when he was young, he got some tapes and he listened to them all summer long. And then I heard him at the Faith Walkers, and he said about how he got these tapes and listened to them all summer long. And then I was here yesterday, and he said the same thing again. Well, what's he trying to say to us? Well, he found something that worked for him, at least. You know, that's on his heart so much. Why? Because he gets this. He knows that changed him. He just focused on truth, and I don't think he uses this term, but he brainwashed himself to believe truth. And someone's going to call us a cult because I use that word, but I'm not saying I should brainwash you. I'm saying let the scripture brainwash you. You know, it's pour over the truth, memorize the truth, think about it, pray about it. All right, let's keep pressing on. Disciple has useful skills. This is, you don't necessarily think about this if you're discipling somebody on campus or something. But if you think about it, like with kids, that a lot of your discipling is equipping. You're having them go to school and they're learning stuff. So a lot of our energy goes into that schoolwork, which I'm not sure really focuses in on the things that we think are the most important. But there are certain things that I want to pass on to my kids. I want them to grow in wisdom. And I think to do that, they can learn Proverbs. I think when we have our quiet times together, and I share my quiet time thought, they share their quiet time thought, they get to hear each other sharing their thought, then they kind of understand, okay, well, this is how you interpret the word, how you understand what it's saying. Coaching them through life situations. Same stuff you do with a college student. You help coach them through life, right? You share quiet time thoughts together. Ministry skills. You know that job that only you can do? That just, if you give it to anybody else, they're going to mess it up. You know, they're going to blow the speaker, or they're going to not cut the corners right on the thing, and it's going to look goofy, and they're going to do something wrong. Quit doing that job and let somebody else do it. You train them. You know, pass on ministry skills. And that's one of the things I love with my kids is is, you know, say, hey, we know we're shorthanded in nursery. Can you do that? Hey, we're shorthanded in Sunday school. Can you do that? Hey, we need somebody on keyboard today. Can you do that? You know, and it's like we're looking at starting another service in the northeast of El Paso. And one of my greatest fears is that I wouldn't have my kids full time because they do the worship at our current location, and I would feel so handicapped because other, you know, it's like, hey, I need somebody to do PowerPoint, or can somebody make this flyer? It's like, we don't know how to do it. It's like, well, let's keep learning some of this stuff. You know, again, older guys, well, you could make a goal. This year, I'm going to learn some useful skill, some ministry skill. Maybe won't do it forever, but it could be something that's helpful to the church. Practically, you encourage guys to learn guitar. It's God's instrument. I really wish we had more graphic design people. That's so important in today's day and age to, you know, kind of fit in with our society, the 1 Corinthians 9 stuff. I think people just get this mindset of either I have the skill or I don't. But I think if we could encourage people to be equipped to bring more to the table, then we could all be growing and have more options to be used in different ways. Let's go on to the next area. Character. If I ask one of those questions at the beginning in a certain way, like, well, what are the qualifications of a pastor? And, you know, character would probably be the thing that would jump out. We know that's really important. 1 Samuel 16:7, that's what the Lord said to Samuel. Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things a man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Samuel was trying to pick David's dad. Jesse's. One of Jesse's sons to be anointed as the next king. And he's looking at him and it's like, wow, that guy's big and he's strong. And he shows up on time and he helps pick up the chairs afterwards. And let's choose him. God's like, no, that's not the way I do things. And a little puny guy is watching the sheep. That's who I want. And so that's the way God is, right? He really wants character. And so when it comes to character, I guess the thing that jumps out to me is what I've really seen make a difference in people. It's not just reading the word, not just memorizing, hey, you got this flaw, you know, you need to do this. But this sounds kind of mean, but it's reproof. And it's, you know, you see somebody do something, say, hey, you know, next time you might want to handle that this way. Or when you said this, you know, it really came across really arrogantly, and you know, probably didn't mean it that way, but you know, maybe you'd say it like this next time. And reproof sounds mean, but it's kind of coaching. And you do that with your kids, too. You know, hey, buddy. And I say it really nice up here, but I can sound kind of mean in real life. But, you know, it's like, hey, what are you doing? You can't do that. You know, just at lunchtime, you know, our little guy Jairo, he kept reaching over a friend of ours to grab stuff or to play with something. It's like, hey, bud, no, you can't reach over someone else's plate. And then, you know, literally like 15 seconds later, hey, you did it again. Oh, well, I could have had him read a little book on manners and stuff, but it probably wouldn't have helped. But if I bring it up right as it's happening, it's like, oh, I see. You know, you're meeting with a guy, and you keep seeing him lose eye contact with you. Oh, there goes again. Huh, pretty girl. There's another pretty girl. Hey, I don't know if you ever noticed this, but every time a pretty girl walks by, your eyes are locked and loaded. And, oh, man, yeah. Yes, I do that. And, you know, then it's like, it's not just, hey, you shouldn't have lost. You know, here's Ephesians 5:3 or something. It's, oh, yeah, I'm doing that. I need to change. There's something messed up here. And so I don't want to downplay the Bible reading, the memorization. Those things are huge. But I think practically sometimes it's just being in someone's life, being able to help coach them through different situations. And I think with character, it's very true that it's going through those trials and persevering through those. You know, probably 10 years ago, I would have looked at who godly people were in the church by different gifts that they had or different personalities, or, well, who's the evangelist, who's really faithful with reading the Word. And now I look at really godly men as people who've just followed the Lord for a long time and just persevered. Because, it's, man, that's so hard to do. That's really hard to do, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, through the ups and downs. It's so tough. And that's what develops that character and perseverance. So let me just close in prayer here. Heavenly Father, I thank you for just how you have worked in each one of our lives and drawn us closer to you. And I thank you for the work that you're continuing to do. We all have plenty of room to grow. I have lots of weaknesses myself, and I understand some stuff I'm just going to be wrestling with probably my whole life. But I don't want to just sit in that. I don't want to accept those things and just think they're no big deal. I want to be more and more like you. And I want to have an influence on my own children. And I want you to save each one, that each one would be a disciple of yours and would love you and would love your people. And God, I pray for the guys in my church. God, I pray that you would raise them up. God, that we would be a mighty army of people who are in love with you, who have a joyful relationship with you, who love following you and serving you, and who care so deeply about your people. And God, I pray you'd help us to stay focused on the things that you say are the most important, and not to just get caught up in checklists. And so just thank you for this time. Thank you for your love for us. In Jesus' name, amen.